Spates. Spates fires, and this one is over. Believe it, Cleveland. Savor it. Soak it in. The kid from Akron has come home. The Cavaliers are NBA champions, and the impossible dream has come true.
John Michael with the call there, that final call of Game 7 against the Golden State Warriors. LeBron James accomplishing kind of what he set out to do in a sense. And there's a book out now that kind of chronicles that. It's called The Comeback, LeBron, the Cavs, and Cleveland. It's written by Cleveland's own Terry Pluto, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Terry.
Hello, guys.
Appreciate you joining us this morning to talk about this. Now, you've covered LeBron for many years, from back in his high school days. What made you decide, well, okay, it's time for me to kind of put this other story out there now about the leaving, coming back, and accomplishing the what some people thought was unimaginable?
When I was reading his Sports Illustrated essay for Coming Back, I became really intrigued and realized this is going to be a story that we've never really seen before in sports. It would be just kind of like, for example, if Michael Jordan had grown up in Chicago, played for the Bulls for a while, and then left and, you know, played for Miami and decided, now I'm coming back to the Bulls. Because you have the hometown element, you have, I was with this team once, I left it in a rough way that turned off a lot of the fan base, and now I'm coming home, and you're coming to a team the 4 years while I was gone had the worst total record in the NBA. How is this going to work out?
What kind of, weight does that put on his shoulders, and what can he tell us about?
Well, I think quite a bit, and so I started really working on this, but I would say within 3 or 4 months after the announcement was made that he was coming back. I didn't know they were going to win a title or what. I just knew it was going to be a fascinating story. I mean, if you're LeBron James, think about this. You say, all right, I'm coming back. I'm going to play for David Blatt. I barely even heard of this guy. I don't know if he can coach or not. David Griffin is my general manager. He's never been a general manager before. And I'm going to be with Dan Gilbert, where there was some really bad blood when I left, you know, both on my end and his end. We're going to try to put all this together, win a title in a place where they've had no championship since 1964. See, the lot of the book doesn't just like, and we have a couple chapters on the playoffs and them winning the title, but so much of it is kind of the backstory, trying to find the right coach, LeBron dealing with the frustrations of when he came back. There's a couple chapters on, you know, the darkest days when LeBron was gone. Were they ever even get anybody to play here? You know, one of the funniest things is, now in retrospect, was Chris Grant was a general manager, and he talked about the night LeBron left, and he's on the phone that night trying to get somebody, anybody, to sign with the Cavaliers. At one point, he's talking to a player's agent, a guy named Matt Barnes that's played around forever. And Barnes, he had a 2-year, $4 million offer from the Lakers. He's offering $5 million. He's offering $6 million. He's offering $7 million. He's finally up to $8 million, and Barnes still won't come to Cleveland. I mean, this was like, you know, a toxic three-mile island zone here for a while, and to see what happened is remarkable.
Terry, can you take us through the time where there was that major divide between LeBron James and Dan Gilbert? How did that come back together?
Well, what happened is that the two guys realize whether they like each other or not, they kind of need each other. LeBron's family never liked Miami. LeBron, I think, was just okay with Miami. LeBron liked winning, and he did win the two titles there. But, you know, he used to come back to Bath and in the Akron area in the off season. They never sold their house. They had that big house. They keep like knocking down parts of it and building more of it. And Gilbert, of course, discovered life without LeBron really stinks. So he kept calling LeBron's agent, Rich Paul, trying to set up meetings. And finally, they set up this meeting down in a house in the Miami area. It was just Gilbert went down himself, and he met with LeBron, Maverick Carter, who's LeBron's marketing guy and cousin, Rich Paul, the agent, and another agent who works with Rich Paul named Mark Termini. And what Dan went down there basically and said, you come home, I'm going to spend all kinds of money, and we're going to win. And he was able to lay out, he had all the facts and figures, showed, frankly, how Miami wasn't spending as much as it should have for winning the titles, and he'll spend more. and we know you want to win. We know, basically, we know we need each other. We don't have to particularly like each other, but we can make this happen in Cleveland. And LeBron was looking for reasons to come home because his family wanted it. So that's how it happened. I mean, they're still not great friends or whatever, but a lot of times you can be business partners with somebody even if he's not your best buddy. In fact, sometimes that's a good thing because you can make sort of judgments that aren't driven by emotion.
What was different about the second time around related to players, the team and the coaches? Anything that really stands out?
A couple of things. Number one, LeBron picked to come home this time. Remember the first time the Cavs picked him? So that was kind of like, okay, I have no choice. I have to play here. But this time I'm picking to come home. So if I start complaining about everything being wrong, well, I've been around. I know what good looks like or bad. This is my decision. And I think that's important, because you're saying, all right, I'm fully invested because this is what I had decided to do. Secondly, the 4 years of Miami taught him how to win. I mean, we may hate to admit this, but being with Pat Riley, being with Dwayne Wade, four straight times to the finals, he learned how to be a leader, frankly, from being around Dwayne Wade. That's a critical thing because that's a different LeBron that came back here to the left in terms of how he talks about things, how he leads his team. You know, as great as it was them winning the title last year, the year before where he took that beat-up team and had Golden State in six games to the finals, that may have been his greatest performance ever. Keith Danbrot and I, Keith was his former coach at St. Vincent St. Mary, we were talking about that yesterday.
Of course, there was the big change in the middle of last season with the coach
right. Being
fired. It kind of sort of seemed unprecedented in a sense.
It was. This guy was 30-11, right. Went to the finals the year before.
Right. What was able to keep that on track and not derail everything when that occurred?
Well, David Griffin, the general manager, felt that the players were not really buying into David Blatt, even though they were winning. And they were almost like winning in spite of the coach. And, Blatt had no background in the NBA. He had no relationships. These guys kind of make their own decision. I'm going to play for this guy or I'm not. You know, the league, the average coach in the league barely averaged the last 3 years. It's a brutal place to coach. And part of the reason David Griffin fired David Blatt and promoted Tyronn Lue was that he knew the players liked Lue, and it's like, okay, I'm taking this excuse away from you guys. I mean, Griffin never said this, but this is what his action said. You don't think Blatt's your guy? You like Lue? Well, here he is. All right, guys, it's now on you. And I really believe that was part of the decision there. A very interesting thing is how when the Cavs hired David Blatt, they immediately brought in Tyronn Lue. They made him the highest paid assistant in the NBA. When they had a midnight meeting, I read about this in the comeback, how they met with Kyrie Irving and his dad and his agent at 12:01 a.m., the first moment they could re-sign him in 2014. At the meeting were, Dan Gilbert, David Griffin, David Blatt, the coach, and Tyronn Lue, which is almost unprecedented, bringing an assistant. But it's kind of like Lue was being positioned to take over the team already back then. So this was one of those, okay, guys, you got your coach. It wasn't just LeBron. A lot of the guys didn't like Blatt because they just felt he was overmatched. And now it's on you. Go win.
Terry, you also write about the character and the chemistry among the current players. Can you talk a little bit about that and some of the key contributions they've made?
Well, in terms of, it really does all. LeBron is like the sun and the rest of the guys of the planets, floating around. And what LeBron's been able to do is, whether it was making Matthew Dellavedova, Tristan Thompson feel valued, or J.R. Smith coming in, he was a troubled soul elsewhere. I think I've had people around the NBA say right now LeBron's leadership is so strong that the peer pressure is on these guys to fit in. Kevin Love struggled. How do I fit? Well, Kevin Love learned, just like Chris Bosh, that, okay, you don't pile up the numbers before, but how do you like your championship ring? And there's a lot of good internal pressure to do it and pressure on that team to do it the right way. And it stems from LeBron. And LeBron, as a coach, now he supports and Tyronn Lue. And we can all play Pollyanna and pretend, oh, well, these players, whoever the coach is, give me a break. the players do what they want, and what you want is the right match between your players and your coach. So, but that was a big thing when they were up. I have a scene in the book. They're down 3-1 in the finals. They're flying out to Golden State, and David Griffin and others are looking around the plane trying to see how the players are going to react. And LeBron is there with one of those computer things and with James Jones, this older veteran, and they're looking at tapes of the game. And soon one player comes over and then another. And before you know it, most of the team is around LeBron and Jones, and they're dissecting the tape and how they're going to win. And this is a big deal because sometimes when you're down 3-1, these guys get on the computers, you know what they're doing? Let's see where I'm going to go on vacation. They're not looking at the game tape. And so that was one of the things where they felt kind of those galvanizing moments. They went out, won Game 5 in Golden State. LeBron started the mantra back then, just get me to Game 7, get me to Game 7. And we saw what happened in Game 7.
Well, we start another season with kind of a beginning of a script that we've never experienced before with a championship. Can you kind of get an idea of how things are going to be going after? Because it's obviously – the ring was accomplished or whatever?
I mean, I'm fascinated to watch it, too. I mean, we have no clue what that's like around here. LeBron is the one guy. He did win back-to-back in 2012 and 13, so he sort of knows what it takes. Yeah, the difficult thing about the regular season when you have the Cavs is that it's like you're almost waiting for at least the Eastern Conference Finals for things to get real. Because the team is so good. It's not like the Indians are the surprise team, and, you know, and every level of the playoffs brings a certain anxiety and excitement. You know, the Cavs are such a heavy favorite in the East. The best thing that probably happened for the Cavs is Kevin Durant going out to Golden State, because that does erase some of the complacency that they might have from having won the year before, and also a little bit of anger of we're the defending champions and everybody just talks about the Warriors. So I like that part. But it is strange when you have LeBron on your team and that, and he's this good. It's like, okay, let's wait for the playoffs. And the regular season is kind of fun and interesting, but it's like one long preseason. You know, it all starts in April. Here's the funny thing. You know, LeBron is already like pacing himself, you know, and so on for the playoffs. But the first 2 weeks of the regular season, he's Eastern Conference Player of the Week. That's how good he is.
Well, there's a lot of players around, and we just had Steph Curry set another record with threes. And so out there, you know, even if you're not playing these teams, they're sort of setting the stage, as it were, for what happens in April. But it's going to be a fun ride this season as well. And we could all enjoy our championship swag that we've purchased, or just being know that we are a championship city. Of course, the Indians coming up a little bit short, but still a great run for them. And then we need a little bit of more salve for our Cleveland Browns. But it's always fun to read the stories you have about the Cleveland sports, because we know there's a real good heart and intellect into it. We appreciate your time, Terry. Thanks, sir.
Right, and I'll be signing books. My publisher will be on me on Wednesday night at Crocker Park, Barnes & Noble. It's from 7 to 8 o'clock Wednesday night. And they always say, go to TerryBluto.com. You can get autographed copies there. So thanks so much, guys. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks again. Again, the book is called The Comeback, LeBron, the Cavs, and Cleveland. Our guest today is Terry Pluto.